Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4, for Spring Semester 2020. Lecture 24, delivered on April 22nd.
Tonight, internal rate of return, in net present value, and the valuation of projects. This is a lecture that has some math in it. However, I'm going to show you how to use your TI-83 Plus calculator to get your answers, and I'm going to show you how to use Excel. This is a very important thing for you to watch and to make sure you understand how to do this. Because what you can do in the homework, online homework, is if they give you a table and say, all right, I want you to calculate the internal rate of return, the net present value, the modified internal rate of return, anything like that, you can just copy the table from the problem and just put it into Excel, into an Excel worksheet. And if you've watched what I did tonight, you'll get your answers immediately. Well, not immediately, but it will be very easy for you to get the answers to the questions that have that kind of math content. Alternately, some of them, it's probably a little faster just to use your calculator to get the answer. So without further ado, let us go on with the lecture. But first, of course, it behooves us very quickly here to have a look at the numbers on the day today. We had, again, one of those days that was something of a dead cat bounce. It was certainly one of those kinds of things that we always like to say, well, see, there's no problem after today. It was all in our minds that there was a bear market. But, of course, that's not the case. Okay. Now, sharing our screen here, if I can do that. Let me drop that down. I just had a look at what was on the chat there. We got share the screen, and we'll have a look at the numbers here just for a minute, just so you can see what's going on. And I can tell you some more about why what happened, what it means, and all that. It deepens your knowledge of financial matters, and whether or not you're a major in finance, it is worth it for you to know how to look at these numbers, how to interpret what they mean for you in particular, in your professional life, your personal home life, and all of that. As you can see, we definitely did have a nice, good up day. And we saw that pattern.
Your audio is horrible.
You notice that the NASDAQ was up the most, and then the S&P 500 was up middle ground, and then the Dow was at the back end. They were all up, but this was clearly, the good news was favoring the small cap stocks. The smaller the company, the more this, whatever the good news was that drove the market today, it was certainly more beneficial to the small caps than it was to the larger and larger caps. Going over here and having a quick look, we have crude oil that is barely positive tonight. And it has been negative several times. It's dipping into negative territory, which has never happened before. You're seeing history. And I mean, this is long history. We've just never seen anything like that before. And it climbed out of the negative territory, but a little ways, and then it slid back in, and now it's crawled back out again, groveling along, as it were. It's just an amazing time where we have crude oil at such incredibly low prices. And as I said before, this is not going to change in the near future. Whether or not it goes negative again, I don't know about that. But it's certainly not going to go up to the old levels where we're talking about $20 a barrel, $60 a barrel, $100 a barrel. That is not going to happen for a long time because there's far too much oil just waiting to be actually to be refined. It's sitting in reserve tanks. It's sitting in tankers on the high seas. There's just no place to put it. Certainly we don't, the demand is also down phenomenally simply because of all the shelter in place that's going on. You just don't have people driving cars the way they did. Even truck fleets are not going using the distillates like diesel fuel nearly as much. So That bodes well. Once we get out of our quarantine, we can go out there and get some cheap gas. But as far as crude oil climbing again, not for some time. But overall, we did have a nice bounce today. It came up a lot. And so we're going to, let me stop this share and come back here to the main screen. Now, as I said, the subject of tonight's lecture is in the realm of capital budgeting. This is how we do the capital budgeting. We try to figure out, okay, let me address that before I go on. Someone said something about the optional. Yes, the last cumulative exam, that cumulative exam 9 through 12, 9 through 13, whatever it was, that's optional. You can take that if you want. The score will count whether it's good or bad. Or you can just not do it, and your score for the cumulative exam portion of the course will just be based on the first, on those two that you already took that are mandatory. And that is just, that's out there for you to use if you want it. If you want to improve your score going into the final and you're confident about the material that I've covered in these last 4 weeks, well, more power to you. Don't go ahead and take that last cumulative exam. The final exam is mandatory unless you want to just blow it. That's 15% of your grade you'd be missing there. So it's a good idea for you not to let that walk away from the final exam. And there are no exceptions. You take it at the time that it is given. I don't want to have to write another. Those are a nightmare to write in VeggieNet. They're not just click punch type. They're, you have to set up all these formats and all this. So there is a final exam, 5:30 to 7:30. There's also an accommodation version of it. That's going to be on Monday night, 2 weeks from, a week from next Monday night. And then it's all over for you. The course is done, and we'll all say our sighs and goodbyes and give our virtual hugs and all that, and we'll go on our way. And maybe we'll all see each other in the fall in actual real life, provided that the economy opens back up and this virus doesn't have a secondary swing to it to try to kill some more people. But anyway, it's that's where we stand now. Yes, get the last work done, chapter 12, definitely. But as far as the cumulative exam, 9 through 12, I think it was, or 9 through 13, that's optional. That's your call, whether you want to do it or not. And but if you do, you know, if you do well, that certainly improves your score for that average for that part of the course. If you don't do well, it damages that average. Risk versus expected return. Funny how that works. Moving along, now that I can get back to it, I can't remember whether it's 15 or 20%. I'm getting to that point now where everything is a blur. Final exam. The chapter 12 homework, yes, that one is that one you do. It is the cumulative exam. And I may have misstated that at some point, but you've got plenty of time to do the chapter 12. If I haven't modified the due date for that, let me know, and I can extend that out another week or so if you want more time for that chapter 12. I wouldn't take it too late, otherwise you're going to forget all this great stuff that I'm teaching you about how to do it. It does say 20%. Okay, it is 20%. I apologize for that. I got a blur of classes going on in my mind now, all of them coming converging on the end of this semester. So, yeah, it's 20% the final is, and it's, I'll talk about it next week. So if you've got questions, by all means, I've got, the review session is on this day, 1 week from tonight. It's just, I tell you what I think you need to know for the final, and then you ask me what you think you would want to, you might need to know. If it's not on the final, you say, is this going to be on the final? And it's not, I'll tell you, no, I'm not going to ask that. I'll go that far with you. And I'll give you some very detailed outlook on what subjects I will cover, what some of them will, I'll tell you right now, some of the questions are going to be from the midterm exam. I'm just going to copy them from the midterm and paste them into the final. Then there will be some other ones which will be just the same questions with different numbers. So there is a lot of reason for you to pull up that answer key. If you can't see that online, let me know. I think it's visible to everyone, but it might not be. But pull up that answer key, and that will give you what you need to know. And I wouldn't worry about, well, what did I get wrong? I want to see why I got that wrong. Just know what it is that's right. And I also, there's a video on YouTube, that one is in ReggieNet, where I review that midterm exam question by question with you. So that will benefit you a lot. If you haven't seen that video that I made, review of that final, of that midterm, where I went through each question individually and told you why the answer that was right was right. That'll benefit you for the final exam. No question about it, because I'm going to copy and paste some of the questions from that, especially questions that directly hit objectives of the course. That's all next week, though. We'll do a comprehensive review. That's all we're going to do on Wednesday of next week. Tuesday, I'll do a little prelim review, go back through a couple of subjects and just tighten them up some. And you'll have the benefit next Monday night of my special end of the semester, presentation for everyone. And it promises to be something that is memorable, unforgettable, and not recordable outside of this classroom. What happens in Professor Kring's FIL 240 classes stays in Professor Kring's 240 classes. But I promise you next Monday night, there will be something for you to remember or try to forget. Oh, God. What? Oh, okay. Oh, great. Give me a second here. But anyway, capital budgeting. Guess I just used my vape. They can't tell me I can't. Okay. Now, we need a way to say yes or no to a project, a mathematical, a numerical way. It is one thing to say, no, we're not going to do this project. It's another thing to show them numbers. If they understand the numbers, they're good with you once you've shown them the numbers. If they don't understand numbers, you just look back at them, you don't understand this. Okay. Where was I? Someone said quiz or no tonight. No, there will be a surprise quiz on Monday night, though. I'm not saying there will. Okay, let me put it this way. I'm not saying there will, but I'm not saying there won't. But that would be quiz 8, and there are 8 for the semester. Okay, capital budgeting. And how do we determine what is the yes threshold versus the no threshold? And I showed you the net present value, how we can say, well, we take the present value of the future expected cash flows, and we bring those back to the present, and we see if the result of bringing those positive cash flows back from an operation gets us a number that is positive when compared to the negative cash flow, which is the cost of us getting this thing going. And on your TI-83 calculator, there's actually a very, very straightforward way to do it. Now, bear with me here. I'm going to pull up a TI-83. We're going to pull up a TI-83 calculator here, I think. Okay, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to lay out some numbers for you. And I'm going to, then I'll switch it over to the TI-83. Now, the numbers for this calculation, I'm going to say that here is the year on this side. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, great. Now, on this side, we will look at the cash flow the free cash flow that is arising. Remember that in finance, we don't care about profit. We care about whether it's generating positive or negative free cash flow. Because you can't pay a bill with a profit line on an accounting statement. Yeah, I got this $350 profit this month, so I'm going to pay you with that right there. Here you go. Here's my paper, my income statement. That's not going to work. So you have to find a better way to, and our way is to say, well, how much cash do you have? So setting aside how you get to that place, let's say that we have an initial expenditure at the beginning, year zero, of $2,200. And we will get a first year of $300 coming in. In the second year, we're going to get $500 in. In the third year, it picks up. This is its peak of revenue at $1,200. And then we're going to pull in $600. And then finally, the project finishes up with $250. And remember, in that last year, you should include whatever money, cash flow you get, you know, from selling the last of the inventory or whatever, but you also include the salvage value if there is any. A salvage value, as I said, could be positive. You sell off the equipment to another company or something, or it could be negative. You got to sell some equipment, but you also have a lot of environmental remediation costs, one cost, by the way, that comes out, and I didn't mention this last time, is when a project ends, there could very well be layoffs of workers. And layoffs actually can be kind of expensive because you might have to have severance pay involved. There's going to be unemployment. They're going to collect unemployment, and that's going to ding your unemployment premiums if you just do this so often. So there could be some negative costs of different kinds in your salvage value. But there could also be positives. Whether the net is positive or negative, you still put it in here in year five, along with whatever residual cash flow from the operations is there. Enough of that. Okay, here we go. The question is whether or not this is a go or a no-go. In other words, do these numbers that are positive overwhelm that initial negative? Because remember that these numbers have to be discounted back to the present. You have to find the present value of each of those. The present value of the $300 for 1 year out, present value of $500 2 years out, etc., adding all those up and then bringing those and comparing them to that. If the result of all of that comes out to be a positive number, we say go. If it comes out to be a negative number, we say no go. And in here, we will need a discount rate. Let's say that just for the giggles of it, we'll take a discount rate of 8%. Now, if you think for 1 minute that I'm going to do that stupid thing right there, I'm not. I'm going to do it on the calculator. I showed you this one last time, and I'm going to pick up my steam here and do this one again with a screen share. Okay, screen share, virtual TI. There we go. There's your screen share right there. And what we're going to do is we're going to actually use something called the net present value, the NPV function. Turn the calculator on, apps, finance. I said app, oh, I got clear. Apps. Your finance, if you're from Decatur. And we're going to go down here to the NPV, the net present value. And we're going to enter. That'll bring us back to the main screen. Now, the first thing you're going to want to do with the NPV is give it the interest rate. When you're using an app, you key it in as a percent. So in this case, 0.8%. If you're doing straight up math, it's always 0.08. But in an app, you will use the point of the 8%. In Excel, you will put in either 8% or 0.08. You don't just put in an 8 in Excel, or it will have a cow. Okay, the next thing we're going to do is we're going to say, all right, comma. That's your way of telling the TIs that you're done with something. Now, the next thing you're going to do is put in the negative initial cash flow. And use the negative sign. Do not use the minus sign. They're different operators. This one's a unary operator. This guy is a binary. But never mind that. Just say negative $2,200. And then we're going to do a comma. We're done with that one. Now, the next thing you're going to do is announce to the TI that you have the positive cash flows coming. You do that by saying second parenthesis. That opens up a brace. If you get an error sign, it's most likely that you put a parenthesis instead of a brace right there or at the end. They're really hard to distinguish from each other once you keyed it in on an LCD screen. But anyway, we got that. Open the brace, and now we just key in one after the other these positive free cash flows. We'll key in the 300, and then we say that one's done. The next one we key in is the 500. We comma. Then we put in a 1200. And then we put in the comma, the 600, and then the 250, 600 comma, 250. Then we close, 250. Then we close the brace. We're telling TI calculator, we are done with the positive free cash flows. We do that with a second close parenthesis. Now you close the whole function off with a parenthesis that matches the one that started the whole mess. And then you say, enter. And you'll get $70.21. The net present value of this project is $70.21. That means you say, we accept the project. If it had been negative, we would have said, we reject the project. That begins our journey. This is how you do it on a TI. Now, the thing is, and I will show you how to do this in Excel here. We'll do all of these in Excel. But the first thing to appreciate is that when you're doing this problem in Excel, it doesn't differentiate between the initial negative and the following positives. You just give it all to them as a single array. And I'll show you that. But here we are. Did I key those numbers in right? 300, 500, 1200, 600? Yeah, I get it. Okay, fine. Okay, so. Now, the thing, though, is we now know that the NPV, NPV for a discount rate of 8% is $70 and some change, $70.21. Okay. What would have happened if I used a 9%? If you ever want to do one thing to a formula or maybe fix something that's wrong, just put second entry. It will open it back up and you can then go in and change something that you want to change. Now, by default, it will overwrite a number. If you want to include and add a number, you have to put second insert. But here, I'm just going to overwrite that with a 9. And we'll see what happens at 9%. And you don't have to bring a cursor down to the bottom, just say enter. It's $10.23. You notice that as the interest rate is going up, the net present value is going down. If I go to 10%, second entry, and put in, bring this thing up, and this time I'll put in the 1 and overwrite the 9, but then I'm going to have to say second insert to scooch a 0 in there. And now we say enter. Uh-oh, it's negative. At 10%, this thing is a negative value. And so if we were told, use a 10% discount rate for this project, you would have rejected the project. Again, notice that the higher the interest rate, the more likely it is for you to reject a project. This is why rising interest rates scare us. And that's why, as I mentioned last time, we are trying to drive interest rates as low as we can, because that makes it much more likely that businesses will accept projects because there's a low discount rate. Okay, I'm going to take this off the board here. If I need it again, I'll just put it back on. If I were to graph this, NPV on this axis, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80. Negative, let's go a little bit farther down. Negative $10. Negative 20, negative 30, negative 40, negative 50. That's a little too tight there. Okay. On the horizontal axis, I'm going to draw the discount rate that I use. R. 1%, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%, 11, stop there. Watch. At 8%, this project is $10, $20, $30, $40, $50, $60, $70. At 9%, it is just barely above $10. And when I get to to 10%, it is actually 20, 30, 40, almost $50 negative. Right there. In fact, this will be I can connect these with it looks like a line, but it's actually a slightly curved line. This line that connects shows the relationship graphically between the discount rate you use and the net present value of a project that comes out is called an NPV profile. Every project will have a net present value profile. In other words, how it goes, see how at lower interest rates, your net present values are positive, but as the interest rate gets higher and higher, eventually your NPV goes negative. And every project will have an NPV profile. Now, what does this mean? Well, there's a couple of things that it'll tell you. One is, let me point this out. The profiles can be very shallow, they can be very steep, depending upon how the cash flows lay out over time. But there's no question that this is helpful. You see this number, see this where it breaks the x-axis, see that place where it cuts through and goes from a positive to a negative? That interest rate there, the interest rate that makes the net present value exactly zero, has a name. That the discount rate that makes the net present value zero is called the internal rate of return.
IRR.
The internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. The internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. You notice I said that twice? You remember why I say things twice or three times. Yeah, it's because I'm so forgetful. I can't remember whether I said it 2 seconds ago. Where's my coffee? There we go. There's my hello, Mr. Coffee. Oh, you're good. Yes, I'm getting to get a little punchy. This little studio of mine is so hot right now. I mean, it's just like if I had some open pit barbecue sauce, I could have myself a really nice dinner off my own fat. Okay, now look, finding this, you would have to just keep trying interest rates back and forth and back and forth until you got an NPV that was as close to zero as you wanted, maybe to two decimal places of a percent. Now, the other way that we used to do it long ago, before we had the calculators and all that, we would actually use very precise graphing paper, engineering graphing paper, and we would graph maybe two or three points very carefully and then draw the line through them, and we would visually see, see right here, that looks like that is at about what? 6, 7, 8, maybe about 8.9%. Is that right? No, it'd have to be above 9%. I didn't draw that very well. Let me try that again. Yeah, if I draw that more straight, better. It looks like it's just above 9%, about 9.1, 9.2%. And if you graphed it really carefully on good engineering graphing paper, that real tight, tiny stuff, and you used a mechanical pencil, you could probably get it pretty accurate, really accurately. But there's an easier way. There's actually an internal rate of return function on your calculators. And there is in Excel too. Now, remember, the internal rate of return, before I do it, the internal rate of return does not need you to input an interest rate. That's what it finds. That's the big difference between this app and the NPV app. Now, let me show you what I mean by this. On. I'm going to go in here and I'm going to edit this function. Second enter. Nope, that was not what I wanted. Clear. I probably blew it that way. Second entry. Okay. Now I'm going to go back up here to the NPV itself. And I'm going to overwrite that because in the apps, finance, just below the first screen is internal rate of return, enter. Do you see how it just overwrote the NPV? Now, everything you put in is the same as the NPV, except that you don't put in an interest rate. So I'm just going to delete that out because it's going to tell you the interest rate that makes the NPV zero. Now, if everything goes according to my plan here, 9.17%. Like I said, just a little above. 9.17% would be the interest rate if I had thought to say, well, let's try 9.17% in the NPV function. The NPV would have come out to be about zero, approximately, because it wouldn't have been exactly the right interest rate. The internal rate of return is highly popular as a capital budgeting technique. Now, it doesn't do anything really on its own, but there are a couple of ways you can use it. Here's the first thing. Okay. You're in charge of figuring out whether projects are go or no go. Now, we use NPV analysis. So you're going to need a discount rate to run the function in your calculator or in Excel. But I'm your manager, I send you the free cash flow. But I forgot to put in a discount rate for you. And you try to call me up, excuse me, I need a discount rate to put this in the NPV function to say whether it's go or no go. But I am away from my desk. Please leave your name, your extension, and a short message, and I'll get back to you when I feel like it. You say, well, crap. No, not really. Because you see, you could still run the internal rate of return function. Let's say the internal rate of return came out to be 11%. Well, the next day I come up to you and I say, well, is it a go or no go? You say, well, you didn't give me a discount rate. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry, my bad. I want you to use 10%. You would immediately say, accept the project. Because you see, if the internal rate of return really is 11%, whatever else about that NPV profile you know that it crosses here at 11%. You know it does. That's the internal rate of return. So when I said use 10%, you say, well, wait a minute. Well, that just means it's a positive net present value project. I would be impressed. Oh. But if I had told you, oh, it's 13%, you would have said, well, reject it because it's on the other side of the internal rate of return, so it's got to be a negative because the internal rate of return is the threshold between accept and reject. So I didn't really need to tell, well, you didn't need to know right off the bat what the discount rate was that I should use simply because you know what the NPV profile looks like. They all look like this. So that's one way that you could use the internal rate of return is to say, okay, we find the internal rate of return because all we need are the cash flow for that. And then when they tell us what discount rate we should use by the CAPM or whatever, or weighted average cost of capital, okay, well, we just immediately know whether it's a go or a no-go the project is. There is another way that the internal rate of return is used. And, okay, the internal rate of return is a flawed method. Make no mistake about that. The internal rate of return has a flaw in it. I'll explain that in a minute here. But there is a way that internal rates of return are used in companies that doesn't have really anything to do with that. And I learned about this years ago in finance, undergrad or grad somewhere. It was called the hurdle rate method of accepting and rejecting projects. And it works like this. A company establishes a policy that says all projects must meet this hurdle rate of 14%. If they can't do that, then we don't accept them. So in other words, what they are saying, and by the way, to finish that, when I got into consulting, I found out that it was actually the hurdle rate decision making, is quite popular. It just establishes a hurdle rate for all projects to meet. So in other words, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20%, 15%, 10%, etc. Okay, suppose that a company sets its hurdle rate right there at 14%, right there 14%. Now, you've got a series of projects. Let's say projects and internal rates of return. Project A, B, C, and D. Project A comes in with an internal rate of return of 12%. Project B comes in with an internal rate of return of 16%. Project C comes in with an internal rate of return of 19%. And Project D comes in with an internal rate of return of 8%. So if I were to look at like Project A, whatever else I know about it, it crosses the horizontal axis at 12%. I don't know exactly the shape of the line, but I know it crosses at 12%. But that means that at the hurdle rate of 14%, it's a negative net present value project. So we would say no. I look at Project B. It's got an internal rate of return of 16%. Whatever else there is about that NPV profile, I know that it crosses the discount rate axis at 16%. So that means that at the hurdle rate, it's a positive NPV project. So that one's a
yes. Can you stop sharing the screen so we can see it?
Say that again. Oh, sorry about that. Let me do that. Let me say that again. I'll kill this screen share. Thank you for that. Sometimes I get my honking along and then I forgot. There. Sweet. Now you can see me. Oh, sorry. Okay. Let me go back through that real quick here.
So now they're saying that right now.
Oh, sorry. Okay. The hurdle rate that this company has set. Hurdle rate.
You're saying Sweden is about the size of Michigan.
Is 14% right there.
And Michigan has
that's its decision place. Now, the next thing is, okay, we've got all these projects internal rates of return. We run them on our calculator or in Excel. And what we find is,
so they opted to keep everything open.
Is there a voice? I have got to get some meds. I'm hearing voices. Okay. Project A, it's got an internal rate of return of 12%. Whatever else there is about that NPV profile line, Project A crosses the discount rate axis at 12%, which means at the hurdle rate of 14%, it's a negative net present value project. So you would say no to it. Project B.
We can't hear you because whoever has the mic on, like it keeps
going. Let me mute the external mics. I thought I had those killed. Apparently I didn't. Okay. Let's try it again. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you. Still not perfect, this Zoom technology, but it works, I suppose. Okay, so now. The 12% internal rate of return at the hurdle rate's negative. So we would say no to the Project A. Project B, whatever else we don't know about its NPV profile, we know it crosses at 16%. So at the hurdle rate of 14%, it's a positive net present value project. So we would say yes. Project C, it's a real humdinger. It crosses clear up here at that interest rate. So at 19%. So it is definitely a positive NPV project at the hurdle rate. So we would say yes to that one. And finally, this Project D, if it has an internal rate of return of 8%, you ran that on the calculator, you know that it crosses the R axis down there at 8%. So by the time you get to the hurdle rate, that thing is terribly negative. You would say no. That's how the hurdle rate decision-making works. The company just sets a hurdle rate policy. Any project has to have an internal rate of return of at least that hurdle rate or better or higher in order for us to accept it. There are two problems with this method. One of them is is simpler, and then one is a little bit deeper math. The big simple problem is this. Where did you find that hurdle rate. Why? In this case, 14%. I actually asked that when I ran into it. The first time I ever ran into it was when I was a consultant, it being used. And they had an internal rate of return for projects of 7.5%. And I said, I just asked the assistant to the treasurer, CFO, I'm sorry. And she said, well, I don't know. That's just what we use. But I'll find out. And she got back to me the next day. We were at a meeting. And I said, okay, well, did you find out? She said, yeah, he didn't know either. We've just always used 7.5%. And I said, you mean it's always been that? When interest rates in the economy go up, when interest rates in the economy go down, you've always had the 7.5%. And she said, well, apparently. And it's just kind of like you're pulling it out of your backside. What's your motivation for why not 7.6%? Why not 5%? Why not 18%? You see, it just doesn't, it's so subjective. Now there's a deeper problem with it. And it goes to the problem that exists within internal rates of return themselves. You see, it comes from polynomial math, and you actually saw it in a very abstract way when you took algebra in high school or in college before you got to the calculus. You saw that polynomials have specific shapes. A polynomial of degree, let's say, degree 2. In other words, a polynomial that the highest power is the second power. That would be, look like a parabola, something like this or the other way. A degree 1, which we call a linear equation, it's like that. In fact, there's degree 0. That's numbers. That's just plain old numbers. And numbers, when you graph them, they're just horizontal lines. They don't even cross the x-axis. Degree 3. A degree 3 can have what? 3. Whoops. It have 1, but it has to have 3 or 1 crossings. Degree 4, degree 5, that's how many maximum crossings it can have of the x-axis. Here's what this means in NPVs. You see, NPVs are actually polynomial equations. You don't see it at first, but they really are. But they are the ones that we typically use. The sign of the cash flow changes once from negative to positive. Well, that would be a degree 1 polynomial, those NPV profiles I've been showing you. There's your internal rate of return. The problem is that if the cash flows start negative, then they go positive, then they go negative again, before they go positive. In other words, sometime down the line, you have to put some more money into the project to get it going again or to upgrade it. Well, unfortunately, what that means is that there is not one sign switch from negative to positive. There's a negative to positive, positive to negative, and then negative to positive again. You have multiple internal rates of return. The calculator won't care. It will give you give it a cash flow that has multiple sign switches. And you say, find the internal rate of return. It'll say, okay. But you see, what you don't know is that it is just finding one of the crossings. Wherever it starts guessing, it'll probably find the one that's closest to that. So if the calculator starts guessing up here, it'll probably find this one. But if the calculator starts guessing down here somewhere, it'll probably find this one. Well, which one is the right internal rate of return? None of them are. They are all what we call spurious results. Internal rate of return has no meaning at all when there are multiple switches in the sign of the cash flow. That's its greatest flaw. It has that weakness. Now, there is a way that you can actually modify the internal rate of return so that even if there are multiple sign switches, it will get you it will turn it into a single sign switch. Basically, it means that whatever negative free cash flows are out there in the project, it will bring the present value of those. Whatever positives, you find the future value of all of those at the end of the project. And then you find a plain old internal rate of return with that negative at the beginning, then zeros all the way until a positive at the end. Complicated? Yeah, but the calculator, but the Excel can do it. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up an Excel sheet here real quick, real quick here. Okay. Now, I did two different projects here, and I'm going to just show you very quickly. Just run through. This is the one that I gave you first, okay? I thought I had the calculations in there. Okay, bite me. Now, let me switch the screen over here. Share the screen. And here we go. There. Now, the first one's the one that I gave you right off the bat. Nothing hard about this one at all. Really? Boy, is this being a crab with me? Why is it being a butt? I need to try this, get this up here somewhere. Well, let's try it. And then bring it back up again. Come on, seriously? Okay. There. Okay. Now, NPV. I'm going to put over here a discount rate. And I'll put down below at 8%. Now remember, Excel knows that that's 0.08. This is a best practices in Excel, is to put the parameters away from the formula. Use as few numbers as you possibly can in the formula and put the actual numbers somewhere else so that you can change them really easily. So in this case, we're going to find the NPV first. NPV. Oops. NPV. And that one's really easy. You just say equals NPV, duh, open parenthesis. It says, what's your rate? Well, I do that one by reference. Did you see that? That was weird. 8%. Now I'm going to put a comma. Now, as I said, with Excel, it doesn't distinguish. Who is writing on my stupid board? Or is that me? There's red marks coming and going. Anyway, cash flow. You don't have to worry about the negative and the positive like you do in the calculator. And then you close the parenthesis, and there's your Uncle Bob. See, that's kind of weird, though, because it was like $70. And I was expecting it to be more like about $65. Oh, well. I must have written a number wrong on that table. Okay, now. How about internal rate of return? IRR. These are so simple, it's stupid. See, if you just copy and paste the data from your homework into Excel, okay, and in this one, not surprisingly, you say IRR, and it says, okay, give me the values. And there you go, there's your dinner. 9.17%. See, that's weird because the IRR is the same, but the calculator gave me a 70 instead of a 65. That's odd. If this happens to you in your homework, you let me know, because there have been times when Excel and the calculators gave different answers. If you get an answer wrong, but you did it right. Okay, well, anyway. Well, here's one that is, do you see the sign switches? You've got negative to positive, and then in year two, you have to put more money into the project, and then that gooses it up for a few more years. So you can't do a traditional internal rate of return. Well, you could, but you get a foolish answer. Now, here's where something important comes in. Because with modified internal rates of return, it assumes that you will discount cash flows at the weighted average cost of capital. But when you get positive cash flows, those are going to reward you at your company's reinvestment rate. So there's two different ones. Now, the problem in the book, the WACC and the reinvestment rate are going to be given to you the same. The problems, I'm sorry, in the homework. But let's do one where we have a weighted average cost of capital of 6%, and we have a reinvestment rate of, let's say, 10%. We can, any positive cash flows, we can reinvest in the company or whatever at a higher rate than our cost of capital, which makes sense. So here's how you do it. You just simply say MIRR, I'll just label it here, and then you say equals MIRR, duh, comma. Now, the first thing you're going to do is tell it the values, just this array right here. Now, the financing rate, that's this rate right here, comma. That's your weighted average cost of capital. How much it costs you to finance a project. And then comma, your reinvestment rate, this right here. Now, the problems in your homework, those two will be the same. Close a parenthesis. Well, spank me. Modified internal rate of return is 4.929%. So in other words, if your hurdle rate for projects were, let's say, 14%, you'd reject this project hands down. If your hurdle rate were 3%, you would accept this project. Those are the major techniques. And what you've seen here is exactly how you do them. And truth be told, if you've got a multiple question problem with a lot of numbers in it, it's going to be easier for you to copy and paste them into Excel and do it that way than to do it on your TI-83. But it's basically, once you get the numbers in, it's just a matter of remembering net present value is equals NPV, IRR is equal IRR, and modified internal rate of return equals MIRR. And that's all there is to it. Okay, stop the share. And that is all I have for you tonight, and I will see you. I do have my office hours tomorrow from my office hour from 12 to 1. I'll send out a link to the Zoom meeting if you want to stop by and ask questions or just come in and add sunshine to my day. It's up to you. There's no mandatory to that at all. But other than that, that's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.